Oh yeah, you know what that music means. It's time for another DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, Mac Mini, MailChimp, and Shopify. That's Mac Mini Colo, MailChimp, and Shopify. They made this show free to you, and we're grateful for that. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N's1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who 25 years ago today started doing the bat dance and has not stopped ever since. Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, Jeff. What's up? There's nothing going on right now. There's nothing going on. E3 is 2 weeks. What? Hi.
Okay, let's hope we can get that sorted out.
Happy Steam sale. There it is.
We're going to hope that you get your brain sorted out in the next few minutes. But, of course, DLC is your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, I am very pleased to say that DLC stands for Designer, Ludologist, Commentator, because we have board game co-designer of the Ares Project and Space Cadets, as well as the host of one of my favorite podcasts, Ludology, and the Game Tech segment on the Dice Tower, Mr. Jeff Engelstein. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
For anybody out there that might not know who Jeff is, as I said, he is a board game designer himself, along with his children, which is such a really, really cool thing, in my opinion. And his games are fantastic. If you haven't played Space Cadets, I've talked about it on this show before, but it's great. And Space Cadets Dice Duel actually took the concept and made it better. And we're going to talk all about that stuff later.
But, and video game designer. Don't forget about that.
Oh, and video. What video game have you designed?
In the late 80s, I had two published games for the Apple II computer, Star
Epic.
Blaster and Panic Button.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Lost in the mist of time. You can actually dig them out somewhere on the internet. They're somewhere, but yeah.
And I'm proud to announce today is the launch of the Kickstarter for both games, HD reboots.
Let's make that happen. Panic
coming
Button.
Coming to Vita.
That's awesome. I have to say, as much as I love your games, Jeff, I'm even more in love with your comments and your insight into gaming, and it's such an interesting way of talking about games and gaming the way you do on Game Tech segments on Dice Tower and in Ludology. You guys talk about it from a real intellectual perspective and give gaming sort of the status I think it deserves and the kind of status that I think we give it on this show as well. So thank you for that. And I would urge people to check out the Ludology. Man, I've been affected with the same thing you have, Christian. My brain's not working. Connected to my tongue.
I appreciate you guys lowering the bar for me. It really takes the pressure off of me to say things that are more intelligent. So that's good.
Well, yeah. You often do.
Follow the script that's in front of you. Just read the lines I gave you and we'll be okay.
Christian, it's bad writing. That's the problem. Too many consonants.
Yeah, but the podcast, I mean, the basic approach that we take, the assumption that we start from is that games are worthy of study and critique and analysis like movies or art or, you know, sculpture or, you know, any other form of creative endeavor. And so we kind of start from there and go.
And you learn some cool stuff. I mean, some of my favorite Game Tech segments are the fact that I learned – this is – a fun party topic that I've brought up numerous times to people is that if I shuffle a deck of cards, I'm most likely resulting in a shuffle that has never been seen in the history of man before, which is crazy to think about. But you kind of scientifically proved it in the Game Tech segment.
Yes, the odds are something like 10 to the minus 32 is the chances of you having, you know, a shuffle that somebody else in recorded history ever had. So it's, yeah. It's pretty remote. So
it's incredible.
It helps bring those concepts. And that's part of Game Tech is to take some of these esoteric concepts like, you know, even quantum mechanics or just basic statistics and things and try to put them into a context that people can understand by using games as a bridge to some of these other ideas.
It's awesome. So you can check that out, the Ludology podcast. Also, those Game Tech segments are part of that feed. So you get both if you subscribe, which I highly recommend. we're coming off of our crazy E3 week coverage where we did daily shows. And last week we sort of had our E3 hangover episode. So this week is going to be a little bit more about board gaming. We're going to talk a lot of tabletop time this week, but we have to start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. It's the part of the show where Jeff wonders what he got himself into. Story of the Week, of course, the segment of the show where we try to convince each other of the most important story that happened in the world of gaming this week. Jeff, I'm curious what you think was the most important story this week.
Besides me being on this this podcast?
Well, that clearly trumps all, for sure.
I didn't have anything that jumped out. I know that there was another, at least in the board game world, another incident on Kickstarter where there was another controversy and a company was offering a product, and then it turned out that the original company didn't really know about it, and then there was a lot of finger pointing and name calling and stuff like that. And that's something that I've been on a little crusade about, is to try to, is my non-understanding of the attraction of Kickstarter. We can get into that in detail, but there was a company.
Let's dive into that right now.
Eagle Games launched their Kickstarter for Through the Ages, which is one of my favorite games, which was originally published by a Czech game, CGE. And shortly after the Kickstarter posted for the new reprinting of the third edition, CGE said, just so everybody knows, we have absolutely no idea what this Kickstarter is, and we didn't authorize it. And then they turned out, then Eagle was like, no, but we have the rights to do it in the U.S., so we can, do whatever we want. And Czech Games was like, well, we're coming out with a new fourth edition, and so people should stay away from the third edition. And it just kind of, it got a little ugly for a while.
Yeah, this is something you've been talking about for a long time, this sort of bubble of Kickstarter. And it's something that we've been talking about on this show as well, both in the video game space and the board game space. And it feels like Kickstarter has taken over the board game space in a really big way.
Right.
And, for positive and for negative. And this definitely feels like one of those negative sides.
Well, in this Eagle Game thing, I mean, they have their copies sitting in the warehouse. I mean, they've been making this game for years, and they've got, 3,000 copies sitting in the warehouse, and they just, basically did a blowout sale of, getting these things out and bundling. Their stretch rewards were bundling the games with other crappy games that they make that they haven't been able to sell. The average rating is like a 5 or 6 on Board Game Geek, which is pretty darn low for those of you that aren't familiar with that site. And it's like, what's the point? At this point, it's just a retail platform. It's not doing its original mission, just not getting money to the hands of the innovators.
People that need it.
Now,
did you guys ever consider using Kickstarter for any of your games?
Well, when Space Cadets was that was right at the beginnings of Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But I didn't super want to go the self-publishing route, and we did talk about it, but in the end, I decided that I wanted the support of a publisher. And after kind of that initial burst of games went out, I didn't want to be the guy that had to go to every single convention and sit behind a folding table and try to hawk my game the whole time. I'd rather just leave that to the people that knew what they were doing, and I could just focus on the parts that I enjoyed.
Right. Well, even publishers are using them now. I don't know if Stronghold ever has. You could correct
Stronghold
me.
Has not done a Kickstarter. They have announced that they're going to be doing a Kickstarter for the Core Worlds digital version.
Yeah.
Which is a departure for them. But in the board games, their attitude is, look, we believe in these games. We don't need to get the money up front and do all that. So we're just going to do it the normal way.
Well, I know you guys are prepping another expansion for Space Cadets. And now that it's a known quantity and a very popular game, I think you could probably be very successful with Kickstarter. That's just not something that's not a road you want to go down.
Well, at this point, it's in the hands of the publisher. So, I mean, their attitude is that they don't want to do it that way. If I was a publisher, I probably would, just because, it's risk-free money. Why would I put my money out there if I could go to people who, in my opinion, maybe are not making the soundest financial judgment of putting money on the table to get something. Maybe they get one or two extra pieces that they couldn't get otherwise for these stretch goals. But, you know, if people are willing to do it, I guess I would be happy to sit back and take their money. But, you know, from a consumer perspective, I think it's just, it's, you know, almost like a fever dream kind of thing. You know, it's like a tulip mania deal where, you know, everyone's just throwing money at this stuff and half of it doesn't materialize or doesn't come, you know, or you get it and it's no good. You know, I personally just like to sit back and wait for reviews and see what things are. And if it's a good game, I'll always be able to get it. And maybe I won't get every last little doodad that were in the stretch goals and the special bonus stuff, but that I've come to peace with that.
Yeah, I think that the you know, there's the situation like Eagle Games is one thing, you know, and that's certainly the outlier that really is egregious. But the real, I think the more pertinent point is what you're talking about, where it's this double-edged sword, because you like the fact that it breaks down the barrier to entry, but also the reason that there is a barrier to entry is to sort of maintain a level of quality. And there's the gatekeepers are keeping the gate because they want to put out great stuff. So it's, you know, I'm conflicted. And it's the same thing with any kind of content. With the technology has broken down barriers to create content for anybody, but that just means that we're flooded with a bunch of crap, frankly. So it's a tough position to be in. And I don't know where I stand, because I like the fact that anybody can throw something up and get funded based on an idea. But oftentimes the ideas that they have are not very good.
Yeah. I mean, just to be clear, I don't blame the people that are putting the ideas out there. I mean, I think that the fault, if there is fault, if you want to put it like that, but it's with the consumers that are willing to pony up their money, you know, knowing that there's a pretty good shot that they're, you know, oh, this sounds like a cool idea, but, you know, they don't really know what it looks like. Maybe they've seen some screenshots or some very preliminary gameplay stuff. And then the thing comes out and it takes years to come out, or it's, you know, it's half-assed, you know, it's whatever. It just doesn't, it doesn't fly. And eventually I just keep believing that people are going to wake up and say, I'm going to be much more selective in what I support and not just, you know, be able to support game after game after game after game.
Right.
I think it's almost going the other way to some extent, where and it's this weird culture, right? Where on the internet, it seems like if you dive into anything, it seems like everyone's doing it. You know, if you go into a message board and you read about a fighting game, at the end of the day, you're like, holy crap, everybody's playing Street Fighter 4. How I got to play that? They're also, or, you know, you dive into a Halo and it's like everybody's playing that, or, you know, a Settlers, you know, board game discussion. It's like, oh my God, I haven't played this game. Everyone's. And I think with Kickstarter and this type of thing, when you're in it, it seems like everyone's doing it, but generally most people aren't, you know what I mean? Like, I know my wife and her group of friends haven't, and my folks aren't aware, you know, they're not in that world. But I think for the people that are in it, it's almost like internet scenesters, right? Like they want, it's like the thing where if you go to the Blink-182 neighbors or neighborhood, whatever their latest album and tour was, you know, you go to that wearing the Cheshire Cat shirt that was only available at, it's like this.
It's just wanting something first. It's needing to have it first and be the guy that gets it first, right?
It's a way to put $5 on your first comment on a message board. And I don't think that's going to go away, unfortunately. But I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I think that's the mentality behind it is like, yeah, being a part of that thing, finding a thing that you can be part of. And then because you put money into it, feeling justified complaining about it later, even though you're still being a troll, but you feel entitled because you put $5 down.
I don't know. I feel like if that brings people joy to be in on the ground floor on something, then so be it. You know?
Sure. But, sure. Yeah. Don't begrudge joy. But I mean, I agree with what Jeff was saying, though, a lot of it where it's kind of at times it feels eye roll worthy where, and I think to some extent too, what you were saying, Jeff, is that I don't think we're at a point. Yeah. It's hard, right? I can just say, I agree with you, Jeff. I don't know if we're at a point where we found a way that this makes everything, you know, the universe, the game space board or video or whatever it is, project creative space. I don't know if we're at a place where Kickstarter has made things better necessarily. They're interesting, but right now I think it's a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Cool. Christian, what is your pick for story of the week?
So this is based on a total unscientific Twitter poll I put out, but I got a good number of responses and I thought it was interesting. Like, if you were going to buy, if your friend said they were going to buy either a Wii U, a PS4, or Xbox One tomorrow, and they currently owned none of them, which one would you recommend and why? And And I got a good number of replies. Most replied was Wii U, which I thought was interesting. I feel like people were replying that, and they themselves have yet to own one. And then the other split was between PS4 and Xbox One. And what I find most fascinating is that the justifications for each console were almost identical, just, you know, the opposite side of things. Like, Xbox exclusives are better. Forza Horizon and Project Spark or Halo. PS4 exclusives are better. Uncharted 4 and Last of Us Remastered. Xbox community is better. PSN is a way better value. And I love seeing things like that, because it's like, oh yeah, be happy with what you have because they're all awesome. And how that rolls into my story of the week, whereas if you are recommending to your friend to go get a Wii U, this is a great week to do it, where you can get the Wii U new Super Mario Brothers U plus Luigi U bundle at Target. This is the United States, for $275 right now, which is like a $25 discount if you want to go that route. Or you can buy a factory refurbished with 1 year warranty Wii U plus Nintendo Land from Nintendo directly for $200, which is, it's currently back ordered, but that's a pretty bang up of a deal. It's $100 discount on that. And then Target is also offering a buy two, get one free on Wii games, which means that if you got the Nintendo refurbished for $200 with Nintendo Land, and then one of the three games you got at Target was Mario Kart 8, which Nintendo is then offering you a free digital game with that purchase, you can get a Wii U and essentially five pretty awesome games for what ends up being $320. That's crazy.
So your story of the week is the ad section of the newspaper.
My story of the week, I love deals, and this is a good deal, and I don't know if everyone is necessarily aware of it. Yes, it's an ad section. I'm not linking you to my Amazon merchant account. I'm just trying to, if people came out of E3 excited about the Wii U, and if you're considering one, this is potentially a great week to go and get one. Pessimist corner.
Where I will support you, sir, is in the fact that I really do think that the most important story this whole week in the world of video games is the Steam Summer Sale. That's what everybody's talking about. That's what, you know, that's kind of big news. And there are massive discounts happening right now post E3 on games. And it's interesting to me, the story we talked about several weeks ago with the statistics that Valve released about people buying games on Steam and not playing them led me to sort of wonder about this idea of collecting. And certainly collecting is applicable in the board gaming space, but also it has become this weird thing in this digital age. You don't even have a shelf to display them on. They're not even physical things, but I feel like there's a lot of people who are actually purchasing games they have no intention of playing, or maybe they're deluding themselves and thinking that they'll play them, but it's really more about getting them all than it is about getting something to play. And I'm wondering, Jeff, what's your feeling about that, either in the digital space or in the board game space, of people who just acquire, right?
Well, I have a problem in this area.
you're a victim?
To admit. I have, I actually just checked my Steam account. I've got 299 games now on Steam that I've purchased, of which I've played an exceedingly small number because, you know, I tend to buy bundles and this and that and the other thing.
It's very typical. Very typical.
Yeah, and that's what it is. And actually, I started this little campaign to work through the games I have in alphabetical order that I haven't played. So I'm on like Arg, a Reckless Disregard for Gravity or something like that. So I'm slowly trying to get through that. It's especially a problem because they tend to be very inexpensive. I mean, most of the stuff you're talking a couple of bucks. So it's easy to go in and just say, okay, fine. I can get six games for $8, or I can get the whole, Paradox collection for, $20 and get eight games for that or whatever it is. And, they tend to build up, and it's kind of aspirational a lot of times. But I think I'm going to be getting back to them more and start to go through it, especially now with the Steam sharing and stuff. So it's easier for my son and myself to share the games and to do do different stuff with it. And on a board game side, I just have as big an issue. I've got my board game collection now is up to like 1,500 titles, 1,600 titles, something like that. Wow. Of which I've played maybe 30 to 40%, something like that.
Yeah, I think Christian has been over to my house a few times and looked on my shelf and seen games still in the shrink wrap. And he's like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, so, you know, it's... But for me, I mean, I enjoy on a board game side. I mean, even I still have a fair number of games in the shrink, but I enjoy reading the rules and pushing, you know, even if I don't actually get it to the table, I absorb a lot just from that aspect of it, of seeing what makes them tick and, you know, just doing that part of it. So, I think the collecting or, you know, on in the digital space, I think your point is a very interesting one. At least, you know, with a board game, I've got a physical thing that I can, you know, pull off the shelf and dust off and try. On a digital thing, it's a lot more amorphous. Mm-hmm. But I like the way, you know, like on GOG, when you go, you know, and I have a fair number of titles from there as well. I mean, they actually show you all the games on a nice little shelf.
Yeah.
That's the metaphor that they presented it. And I think that makes it feel more like you've got this heirloom quality right. collection that you're showing. Whereas Steam, it's a lot more, you know, with just the list or the tiles, it's not quite as visceral in that fashion.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about,
but for whatever reason, I have not been as, you know, for some reason, things just haven't grabbed me on the Steam sale so far. It's weird. I mean, usually by this point, I've bought, you know, at least a few things. And so far, no. Although I was looking closely at Berlin City Bus Simulator, but.
Amazing. That one you would have to play fairly soon because it starts with a B.
That's true. That's a good point. So I need to take that into consideration.
I'm so fascinated by this idea. It's very much something I would do. This weird rule that I put in place for myself that I have to do them in alphabetical order. I find that fascinating.
Well, just as part, just not to reveal my OCD too clearly on this show, but in 2013, I had my iPod. You know, I had like 3,000 songs or 4,000 songs or something on it, most of which I've never listened to or listened to experienced. So, starting January 1st, 2013, this is the only New Year's resolution I've ever kept in my life. I said I'm going to listen to every song on my iPod in alphabetical order by song title, and it took me until like beginning of December. We wrapped it up with some various Z songs. And I think yeah. It was 8675309 might have been the last song.
Amazing. You had like
the same.
You had like two weeks of I love you song. I this. I that.
Oh yeah, it was very interesting. You know, just from that. Part of it. So, but it was, yeah, it was crazy. And the family was starting to go a little nuts after a while, but they accepted it.
I love that. I'm so about those weird self-imposed rules. I do that to myself too. And it's bizarre. Anyway, Christian, you were going to say something?
Oh, I did the same thing when I had my old, you know, millions or whatever, you know, huge CD case logic cases of CDs, music CDs. And I was going to digitize all and get in my iTunes. Like, okay, before I spend the time to rip these to my computer, I'm going to listen to them. And only if I listen to it will I. And I listened to every CD that I owned in my car as I drove around. And I think it took me almost an entire year to do. And man, some were painful. It was like, you know, we all bought that Enya CD. And it was like,
did we?
Yes, we did, Jeff. I know you own it. And then we all have that UB40 CD, and they only have one song on it. And you're just like, what are you? Why? And then like Smash Mouth. It's like, what happened to me?
One of my favorite. Sale, I'm sorry. I was going to continue to tangentialize. One of my favorite stories from This American Life is this guy who decided he was going to eat at every restaurant on this one boulevard in New York City, but yes. From one end to the other. And he wouldn't skip any. And if something new opened, he'd have to go back and do that one beforehand. Fascinating. And I don't know why I'm so drawn to that kind of behavior. I guess it is OCD, but I find that discipline level to be oddly inspiring. Anyway.
Yeah, I love.
Well, but
I love,
also, games are about rules. I mean, you right. know, if you want to put a ball in a hole, there's a lot easier ways to do it than playing golf.
Right.
You know, you can just walk over and drop the ball in the hole. So that's, you know, in a way, the people that are attracted to games, in one sense, you know, already kind of have that hardwired in them of how can I set up obstacles myself to achieving the goal easily of eating dinner.
This is why you guys need to be listening to Ludology, because this is the kind of insight and. you know, relating that stuff to everyday life. I find that stuff to be wildly fascinating. But we also need to pay the bills on this show. So I have to tell you about Mac Mini Colo. Mac Mini Colo is the original Mac Mini hosting company. They make it really easy to set up and maintain your hosting, your Colo center without the hassle of a setup fee. They have world-class data center currently hosting hundreds of Mac Minis for satisfied customers from over 40 different countries around the world. Mac Mini Colo makes sure you get great high performance no matter where you are, and you never have to worry about running out of space because you can get up to 2 terabytes of storage and up to 16 gigabytes of RAM. And for those who want even more power, you can check out MacProColo.net. That's MacProColo.net, where they provide colocation services for your new Mac Pro. So just remember, Mac Mini Colo is where low cost meets high performance to create the perfect Mac server. Just visit MacMiniColo.net/5x5. That's MacMiniColo.net/5x5 to learn more. Mac Mini Colo sponsors DLC, and we are so grateful for that. We hope you support them in return. All right, dudes, I wanted to mention my favorite story of the week. I think we established the Steam sale is kind of the story of the week. But my favorite story that came out this week is this wonderful article I read on Polygon.com about this World of Warcraft player named Double Agent, who started a Pandarian, which is the race that was introduced in the last World of Pandaria expansion. And the thing that was interesting about this race is that they were neutral, at least when they started on their little island. They were neutral in the great war between the Horde and the Alliance. And this player decided he wanted to try to level up his character and remain neutral. Now, normally the progression is that you start a Pandarian, and at level 10, you have to make a decision as to whether you're going to become Alliance or you're going to join the Horde. And at that point, you can leave Pandarian Island and go off and do the rest of the game and level up and yada, yada, yada. Play the game. Well, this guy decided he wanted to remain neutral and not join either faction. So when he reached level 10 as normal, he decided to stay in the starting zone. Now, if you out-level, as you know from MMOs, if you out-level all the things that you can kill, they no longer give you experience points. So the only way he could get experience points was to just farm mining and herbalism over and over. And he managed to get to level 90 by doing that without ever leaving the island, without ever choosing a faction.
It took ever leaving his house.
It took him 173 and a half hours. And I think this completely relates to what we were just talking about as far as self-imposed rules. And we can agree that this is crazy, but there is this wonderful devotion to the narrative in this game and saying, I do not want to join either side of this war. I want to remain loyal to the fiction of what this race of characters is about and remain neutral and to prove that you can do it. What is your opinion of this, Jeff Engelstein?
I think it wasn't 173 days, not 173 hours.
Oh, you're right. I misspoke. Yes, 173 and a half days of and that's not like he woke up and played a few hours that day. It's right. Of play time, of hours, like divided by 24 hours.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what we're kind of talking about is, you know, it's impressive, it's insane. But, you know, hey, you know, more power to him, I guess. You know, my daughter, I think that, you know, people can be happy with that. My daughter, when she was smaller, she just graduated from high school. But, you know, even to this day, but starting from when she was a kid, if she was losing in a game or it wasn't going her way, she would just make up some goal of what, you know, she changed her victory conditions. So no matter what happened, she could say that she won at the end.
That's pretty awesome.
So, you know, especially with an MMO where it's much more open-ended anyway. You know, you're kind of making up your own goals anyway. So what the heck? You got to admire the dedication.
Yeah. Christian, are you going to crap all over this?
Jeff. If anyone, I mentioned a really awesome deal on the Wii U, and you crapped all over it. I have not crapped on anything. I would like to mention that every year during the Steam sale, I like to remind people to go play their PS Plus games if they're a PS Plus member, because I think that goes into the collecting thing where everybody gets them every month and they rarely play them. But no, I'm not going to crap all over this. I think that this individual, that he or she probably had a lot of fun doing it, and that's awesome. And I'm tired of you crapping over me. And DLC stands for never again. Yeah, that's what DLC.
I like that in the chat room, Lawman just suggested the show title should be Christian is going to crap all over this.
Only if it's,
but I mean, all this stuff, it goes back, is it interfering with his normal life, you know, and his functioning in his everyday life? You know, if he had to lock himself in a room for 180 straight days to accomplish this goal, then maybe there are some issues that he may need to seek help with.
Well, it's also how tremendously unfun this sounds, just wandering around the starter area and, you know, mining and herbalizing, which is admittedly one of the most boring parts of the game anyway, but to do that exclusively and to eke out the tiniest bit of XP from those, because you get a small amount of XP from doing that stuff.
But that's what makes it fun, I think, is when you commit to doing it to level cap, right? Like, if you're doing it to get to something else, then yes, it's not fun because you're doing it as the chore that gets in your way of your fun. But if that is your fun, I mean, so many things can be portrayed like this, right? It's like entering the entertainment business. If you don't enjoy every aspect of it, if you only want to become famous or whatever, that you're doing it for the wrong reasons. I think it was Dustin Hoffman on Inside the Actor Studio that said, you know, it was like, oh, if you weren't a famous actor, what would you do with your life? And he said, I would be a not famous actor. Like, this is the craft that I love to do. Or like working out, you know, it's like, oh, you know, you have to enjoy being a geek and sneak to go run. Your goal can't be, I'm going to run a 2-hour marathon without enjoying the 4-hour runs you do to get there. And so like Twitch plays Pokemon. That's madness until you realize the fun in the madness. And so whenever this person, I think, came up with this idea, I'm sure then it became awesome because it's like, I think you get giddy when you get this idea. You're like, oh, man, I did it. 10 more XP. This is amazing.
Yeah, or
you know?
This is possible. All I have to do is stay committed to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Are you going to crap all over that, Jeff?
It's not what I do. I don't want to step on your turf, man. That's your turf.
Jeff loves loving things as long as it's crapping over all over something.
All right. Well, like I said, this is going to be a much more tabletop time focused episode. So let's get to it. Tabletop time. Jeff, I'm so excited to talk about your games and stuff, but I've noticed that you have been playing a couple of games that I'm really interested in as well. So first, let's talk about that. I've heard such great things about Splendor. Everyone keeps talking about how it's a shoo-in for Spiel des Jahres this year. What was your experience playing Splendor?
I enjoyed Splendor. I think it's got a pretty good shot at Spiel des Jahres, especially, you know, the other two nominees are Concept, which is almost like a party game, kind of like charades, where there's these different concepts and colors and icons. It's basically a board filled with like 200 icons, and you put markers on the icons to try to convey, you know, washing machine or something like that. Hmm. And we played that, and it totally fell flat for us. And then the third one is Camel Up, which is like a camel racing game, and you bet on the camels. But I have not played that one, but I know people like that, but certainly Splendor would be a worthy award winner there. And it's really, really simple. There's just an array of cards on the table with a cost in gems. There's five different color gems. And on your turn, you can either collect more gems or you can use gems you have to buy a card. And the cards give you points, and they also give you permanent gems that count towards purchasing the higher level cards, and you have to get to 15 points. So it's really streamlined. You can teach it really quickly. There's some fun strategies. I mean, the basic strategy in the game, this is what I call a classic pivot game, where there's, in the beginning, you're kind of building up your gems and getting cards that maybe don't give you points but give you gems to use in the future. And at some point, you've got to flip the switch and say, okay, I'm going to stop collecting gems and I'm going to start getting points and dash for victory. And the timing of when you do that is kind of the whole key to it. So it's a fun little game. And it comes with these really, the gems are these awesome heavy poker chip pieces, which I think goes a lot towards making it fun to play.
Yeah, that definitely looks really cool.
What's the flipping the switch? Like, you know, and forgive me if this is just common knowledge of someone that is more into this type of game. I thought it was interesting. You're like, until someone decides to flip the switch, is there a strategy or element into when to do that? Or is it kind of like, you know, just that's the progression point?
No, that's just the progression point where, because there's a lot of easier to obtain cards don't take that many gems, but don't give you any points. They just give you gems for, you know, using to get the better cards. But that have points, but at some point you got to switch and say, okay, I'm going to stop building up my economy, in essence, my engine, and I'm going to start buying the victory point cards.
Just like I need to leave my hub world in World of Warcraft. I don't think so, Jeff.
Yeah, so it's a good one. I would certainly recommend it to folks that are looking for a lighter, quick game. You know, it takes like 20 minutes maybe to play. It's a quick, fast family game.
Yeah, it seems that. In recent years, the spiel has been more about that, and the games that I'm much more interested in seem to be the ones that are nominated for Kenner Spiel. But you know, these games are fun fillers and stuff as well. I'm definitely interested in playing Splendor. Also, you got a chance to play Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, that was that's kind of a race game. You basically have your little expedition and you're trying to go up the river and over the mountains and make it, be the first one to make it to the Pacific. It's sort of worker placement, but sort of a twist on that. But we really enjoyed it. It took a little while to wrap our heads around it, but I would certainly be interested in trying that one again. There's a lot of different elements and different moving parts in terms of different mechanisms in the game, and you have to kind of decide which way you're going to try to do it and focus on that. So it was it's a fun one.
That's really cool. Now, as somebody who designs games, one of the things I've always wanted you to talk about more on Ludology is what the sort of day-to-day process of that is. You know, what does a designer do day-to-day to iterate on their game other than, I guess, play it over and over and kind of get a feel for what works and what doesn't? Is there, you know, when you're trying to develop a new idea, is there a work flow that you have? Is there a day-to-day thing that you're doing?
It's mainly kind of scattershot. I mean, a lot of it is, and first off, this is a part-time thing for me. I have a real live job that right. actually pays me. If I had to live on game design, it would not be pretty.
Right.
I would not have 299 Steam games, that's for sure. a lot of it, for me, it tends to go in bursts. You know, I tend to work really intensely on a project and do a lot of playing and then maybe run into a little bit of a wall. And then I kind of, you know, stick it in the back of my mind and let it lie fallow for a little while. And hopefully, and then usually after about a week or so, a couple of weeks, maybe there'll be a new idea that comes in from a different direction and says, okay, we can to get over this or to simplify this or, you know, to deal with this roadblock, you know, we can make this change. But really a lot of, just a lot of, you know, testing is super critical of just, trying things. And a lot of it, initially I'll just do it myself or with the kids and we'll just push some things around. And then, you know, once you get it to a certain stage to try to get it in front of other people and see how they react to the material as well.
I didn't know, as you had mentioned earlier in the episode, I didn't know that you were a video game designer. I know that the first game that you designed, the Ares Project with your son, that was sort of a board game version of a real-time strategy game. Is that sort of the overarching concept?
Yes. Yeah. That was absolutely where it started. I was a big fan of StarCraft and Total Annihilation and Age of Empires and those kind of games. And we wanted to try to capture that in a board game. So that was kind of the way that we, that was the visions, the kind of the star off in the distance that we're always aiming towards was how do we make this feel like a real-time start? There is a StarCraft board game and I enjoyed that, but it didn't feel anything like StarCraft. And I think that Blizzard kind of directed it in that way from talking to folks at Fantasy Flight, is they didn't want it to be like a tactical map and you move pieces around and, you know, build a base and stuff like that. So we wanted that base building aspect. We wanted that fog of war aspect. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we focused on. And we actually didn't even really have a map. It's very abstracted from a map. There's a contested neutral zone in the middle we call the frontier, and then each person has a base. So if you take the frontier, then you can directly strike at the other guy's base, and if you win at his base, then you win the game. So
yeah, it's a fantastic game, and I'm so fascinated at this point at which board games and video games can intersect and inform one another. I mean, I think that's a lot of what the raison d'etre for this show is, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I think that our audience tends to be people that, I mean, I think there's a lot of avid board gamers in our audience, but I think that part of what the show does is open up board gaming to a bunch of video gamers who never thought it could be fun. And so that episodes like this one, when we have people like you on, I love talking about that place where board games can sort of get at a video gamer. Do you know what I mean? To sort of, there's games that can be a video gamer can get into the hobby through certain games. And I think Ares Project is one of those.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that was the same thing that kind of came into Space Cadets and Space Cadets Dice Duel, was also to try to, you know, in some way capture those ideas of real time. For some reason, my designs tend to, I tend to keep coming back to this real time idea. We actually originally tried to make Ares Project totally real time, where you could just play cards as fast as you could. Mm-hmm. But we had to stop that when my son constantly won. So that was the end of that idea.
There's a few games like that. I played a game called Jab, a real time boxing game.
Yes. Oh yeah.
That's Jab, really fun.
Falling. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
That do that idea where you just throw cards down, going all the way back to Spit, which I played tons when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
You know, just for me personally, you know, when I look at a game like Splendor, you know, that's not the kind of game that I'm going to design. And I love, and it's a great game and it's a great design. I said, I do this as a hobby. So when I sit down to design a game, you know, I know I'm going to have to play it hundreds of times. And I know that, you know, it's got to keep my interest through the, you know, multi-year development process. So, and it's taking me away from all the other stuff that I want to do. So I want to solve a problem. I mean, I want to try to do something that hasn't really been done before. You know, Lords of Waterdeep is another great game, but, you know, I wouldn't have designed that because it's basically taking sort of existing mechanics and polishing them into a terrific compact package that plays really well. But, you know, for me, I want to try to do something that's been totally different. And that's why, you know, Ares Project, we didn't really know of another game that did what we wanted to do. And, you know, Space Cadets with all the collections of the mini games where you play the crew of a starship, and then Dice Duel, which that the real time starship battling concept, where again, there are no turns and people are just rolling dice as fast as they can. We try to do something that's very different each time we, you know, come up with an idea for a game.
And it's wildly fun. I have talked about Space Cadets and Dice Tool on the show before, and I'm such a fan of those games. But I'm glad you brought it up in that contest, because one of the things that I've quoted you on this show before saying is this idea, I think you did in a Game Tech segment at one point, about only being able to introduce one new concept without completely alienating a player. And I wonder if you feel like that is still present in the video game space as well. Is still a necessity, a limit.
I think that video games have the advantage that they can more carefully introduce new concepts. That's one of the things in the video game design space that I'm very envious of, is I think that it's with the way that people have so mastered the idea of the tutorial and the gradual introduction and layering of new mechanics, it's a lot easier to get people learning the different tools that they have at their disposal in a controlled way. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a board game, you know, if I can get somebody to play the game three times, you know, that's great. And for me to have a bunch of introductory scenarios, it's asking a lot of players in a way to get the group together and sit down. I mean, one of my favorite games is, I love Space Alert, is another real time game. That one has got like this 10-minute sort of introductory mission that you do.
Right.
But I mean, I've gone through that mission 150 times because just about every time I sit down with new players. Yeah. And you got to go through that again and walk through it. And it's just, you know, video games are much more advantageous to bringing in innovation because you have that opportunity to ease players in a properly designed tutorial. It's possible to draw people in, and you know, like the Europa Universalis games where it's like totally overwhelm the players all at once. But you know, if there's enough games that do it well.
Yeah. I have that same issue with Agricola. You know, it's like, I'm introducing you to this 2.5 hour process so that we can get to the really good 2.5 hour process where we get to introduce all the cards. You know, we can play the family game so that you get it. And now what I really want to play is this, you know, and that's a problem. And I feel like that's the biggest barrier to entry for people. I mean, Christian can speak about this too, because I've been pushing and pushing him to play more and more games. And it's the learning curve. I think you guys did a very smart thing with Space Cadets, the first Space Cadets, in the sense of releasing those videos online of each station to have this compact lesson for each station. So you can just watch that video and you don't have to absorb the entire game. You just have to absorb your part of it. But I wonder what you think the challenge is going forward for game designers to make games easier to learn.
Well, before, may I step in with a potentially very ignorant question? But, you know, because I feel like in board games, at least the ones I'm familiar with and the ones that you're, you know, introducing me to, Jeff, are more akin to make a video game analogy to, you know, aside from obviously the video game representation of the exact same board game. I'm not talking about that. But, you know, they're multiplayer games. And so I feel like those oftentimes maybe introduce one or two new elements per iteration, because I feel like where video games are able to introduce new concepts to the player is in more of a single player style game, because there's progression. You know what I mean? Whereas or sitting someone down to play Titanfall for the first time, it's like trying to convince someone to play it. Yeah, they can sit down and play it for 10 minutes, but to be any good and to understand it, you need to learn the map, you need to learn how to play, or if you're going into a MOBA, you need to learn your role, you need to learn how to play your class, and all of those elements. To me, that is closer to a board game than, say, The Last of Us. And my potentially ignorant question is there a board game that is more akin to The Last of Us, where I feel like you could introduce, and maybe it's D&D is the answer to this, but you can introduce more and more mechanics as you go through, but then the flip side of that is after you experience said game, you really don't ever go back to it because you've done it. Does that exist in the board game space, where it's, you know, a quote-unquote single-player narrative story-based game, and you can introduce new stuff every hour, and then it adds on, but then you finish the game and you're like, wow, you know, and Susan went to space, or whatever it is.
Well, I think...
Well, I
go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
Sure. I think that there are some games that tend towards that end of it. I think that, though, there's always an element of replayability. I think in the board game space, especially, you know, even if it's D&D, you know, you spend a lot of time to learn the system, but then there's a lot of different adventures and things that you can do. So it becomes a framework of what it is. I think that the best games that kind of are easy to get into in terms of learning curve are games that do that, what you're talking about, within a single game, where and the savvy person teaching the game can just introduce rules as they come up. You know, there's an old game from the 70s called Civilization, which later was the basis for the Sid Meier Civilization, where you start with one piece on the board and you can move it one space, and then you grow your population by putting a second piece on the same space as the first piece. You know, and then eventually you can build cities, and then the cities can trade, and the trade goods can buy you bonus cards. But it gradually builds over a series of turns, and you can teach it as you go. And a lot more games are trying to incorporate that as the way to do it. So by the time you finish, you can you'll know everything, but you don't have to sit everyone around a table and give everybody a 30-minute explanation or 45-minute explanation of what's going on. You can just dive right into it, and people may not win the first time, but they'll at least be able to play all the way through.
Yeah, one of my favorite
there
games.
There are games, I mean, and on the flip side, there are games that are doing that on a more permanent basis, really pioneered by Rob Davio from Hasbro, who introduced Risk Legacy, which is a risk variant where there's a very specific narrative flow, and there are you're only supposed to play the game 15 times. And there are packets within the game that you're supposed to open up when certain defined events happen that permanently change the course of the game and the board. You put stickers on the board. You tear up cards. You throw things away. You write on the map. There's things where you're creating a permanent record over the course of those 15 games, but it's designed to end after that. And he's working on a few more projects, and some other people are starting to pick up on that thread and say, okay, let's create a defined experience, you know, almost like an adventure game in the video game space, where you know you're not going to play most of those. You're not going to play through more than one time. Say this is I'm going to try to tell a story in a more controlled way.
Yeah,
the chat is yelling Space Hulk at me, to which I'm trolling them back with World War Hulk. I'll get it on trade paperback. But yeah, they're saying,
I don't think Space Hulk is different. Space Hulk's like, you know, it's some of the games where you've got a framework and there's a lot of missions you can play within that framework, but it doesn't really have the same kind of narrative thing that I believe you're talking about. Well, then you can throw somebody out into space. So I guess you could get to do that.
Oh, so Susan can go to space. That's all I'm looking for.
Yeah, I got a chance to talk to Rob Davio at PAX East, and I'm hopeful that he'll be a guest on the show at some point as well. And Seafall is his next project, and it sounds, just talking to him about just how crazy the idea is of creating that kind of legacy game without the risk framework already in place, like inventing a game and then having to continually reinvent it every step of the way because people are changing it, and each change will, you have to kind of, you know, play test each step along that weird metamorphosis that the game is going through. It just sounds like a tremendous amount of work.
Yeah, there's a lot of you can introduce the different little packs and new rules at different times. There's not a controlled order that they come in. You can kind of project the order, but really he's got to make it mix and match. So if you know, pack C comes in before B, it's still gonna work okay.
And that legacy concept is an example of this new idea that was brought in that people are kind of running with. It sounds like, I mean, we've had a Flux Legacy or something like that. But it seems like the people are picking that up and running with it. And I keep wondering when we're going to see the Space Cadets concept, you know, the mini games as a larger game concept iterated on by other designers. Or is that something that you're looking forward to, or is it something that you are worried about?
No, I'd love to see it. I think that would be very flattering if somebody felt enough of it to take it and use it in a different context. Somebody posted at one point on Twitter that they wanted to take the dice duel concept of the real-time dice rolling and apply it to a giant robot fighting game, but he didn't want to step on my toes. And I was like, no, go ahead. Knock yourself out. I think that'd be really cool. Yeah. So
it's awesome. And it's such a cool if people haven't played either of those games, they really should. It's such a wild, frenetic, as you said, real-time situation where you're playing cooperatively kind of, and you're playing competitively kind of, but you don't have the time to look over anybody else's shoulder to figure out what they're doing. You just have to trust your teammates are doing the right thing, and crazy bad stuff will happen by accident. And I think taking that into other contexts would be wildly fun, and I hope it happens.
Absolutely.
Have you ever played in the board game space? Have you played FTL?
Sure.
And Space
Team.
Well,
the video game space you're talking about.
Yeah.
Sale right now on Steam and on iPad.
Both of those feel like similar to Space Cadets. Mr. Sales over there. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, no, FTL is a really cool game. I enjoy it. I sometimes feel at the mercy of a little too much luck for my taste, but I admire that game tremendously.
All right, I got to do some more business here because we got three sponsors this week. We also have our friends over at MailChimp. MailChimp is an easy way to email newsletters. If you have any reason to talk to groups of people at a time, MailChimp makes it easy. They help you design email newsletters, share them on social networks, integrate them with services you already use, and track your results. It's like your own personal publishing platform. You can customize your newsletter signup to match your brand. You can share your signup on your website and your Facebook page. And you can even collect signups from an iPad or a laptop. You can import existing email lists, no matter the format. So if you have stuff you've already collected, boom, bam, bing, it's into MailChimp. Personalize what your subscribers see, including sign-up forms and confirmation emails. And right now, there has never been a better time to try MailChimp. With their entrepreneur plan, if you have under 2,000 subscribers, you can send 12,000 emails per month forever. Just visit MailChimp.com/5x5 to learn more. That's MailChimp.com/5x5. We appreciate MailChimp's support and hope you support them in return. All right, guys, we can wrap up tabletop time here. But there's one more thing that I wanted to bring up because you guys did an entire Ludology episode about it, and it really struck a chord with me. I know it's not your concept, but it's one that I have picked up on, and that is this concept of the magic circle. This idea that when you sit down to a game, that you are entering into what one writer deemed the magic circle, where there is an accepted set of rules and behavior and decorum that is essential to completing the task that we have all agreed to, that this is a social contract that we're all signing. And I would love that to translate into the video game space, because I find that there is no magic circle when you're dealing with strangers online. And could you talk a little bit about that and explain it maybe better than I?
Yeah, the main proponent of this idea is Eric Zimmerman from the NYU Game Center. And he did a book called Rules of Play, which I would highly recommend to folks that are interested in these types of topics. And he talks a lot about video games and board games and the intersection of them, and tries to do a taxonomy and kind of classify different aspects. But yeah, I mean, the idea is that you create a game space, a sacred space almost, where we all agree to abide by certain rules. And you know, we kind of touched on that before in terms of, you know, it could be, you know, almost something as simple as, you know, being in the real world and deciding that you're going to act a certain way towards, you know, a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, where the players are expected, you know, some campaigns, everyone's supposed to act in character, you know, and some you can, you know, step outside character and do things and then step back in. And, you know, this different groups will have different rules and different ways that they approach it. But basically, you know, the idea is that a game in almost every game kind of creates this idea, this boundary between the real world, what's going on in the real world, and what's going on in the game. And we all have to accept that we're going to pass into this, and we're all going to, you know, these are the rules that we're going to follow and things like that. It's not necessarily about social behavior, but I think that in one of the differences with a video game is, I mean, I think in a board game, everybody has to kind of agree that the players have to enforce the rules, right? Mm-hmm. In a video game, the game enforces the rules.
Right.
If I'm playing Call of Duty, you know, whatever I can do with my gamepad, I'm going to do. But I don't have to think about what the rules are and how they work in the game world. I just operate within the game world, and the game keeps me honest.
Right.
Whereas in a board game, it requires that participation of players that, you know, I'm not going to try to lean over and look at somebody else's cards, or I'm going to discard these cards here, and I'm going to, you know, everyone can't keep track of exactly what you're doing. And I think the other issue in the video game world is the anonymity, of course. You know, behavior tends to degrade when people don't have to look face to face at somebody and, you know, look in their eyes and you know, say those kinds of things that you would be comfortable saying with online. Although there are some groups that talk like that all the time, whether it's, you know, a board game or online or with friends or with strangers or whatever.
Yeah. I just think it's such a awesome concept to sort of, not to keep people in line per se, but to just understand that we're all participating in the same contract, really. We're that in order for you to have fun, you have to ensure my fun. And that is one of the things I love most about sitting down at a table to play a game with somebody rather than turning on a console and jumping into a pool of mystery a-holes, you know?
Right.
So
right. And part of that is that we're all going to have the same goals in a way, and that, you know, the assumption is when you sit down with any game is that everyone is going to be playing to win. And I can't fault anybody for taking actions that furthers their own ends of winning. But if somebody establishes a new goal that they're just going to make my life hell,
right,
and, you know, and can't my spot or whatever, you know, if it's helping them win, then that's fine. That's a problem with the game design. But if they're just doing it to be a jerk, you know, or that's what they're getting enjoyment out of, that's not the game that I signed up for. And that's when you start stepping outside that magic circle and things start breaking apart.
Yeah. And it's, and as more of these games like DayZ, for example, introduce really just open-ended experiences where there is no set goal, there is no set rule of winning or losing, it becomes, well, how do I make my own fun? And these more sandbox experiences that involve multiplayer, I think, are much more inclined to require a magic circle, or at least you know, lead people to needing to rely on others in order to maintain their level of fun. And I think we're going to experience that more and more as the sort of Minecraftification of gaming comes to fruition.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And you should see that in Eve and the way that they are having difficulty attracting newer players and things like that, because it's going to be a certain type of person, and it's, you know, you got to be willing to invest and get to that point where you start interacting on that same way.
And those players get so entrenched. Yeah. All right. Not to ignore video games completely, let's get to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All right, guys. We got some fun games on the playlist. Christian, why don't you hit me up with something you've been playing this week?
I dove into my, took my own good advice, I might add, and dove into my PS Plus games catalog. I was looking for something a little action-y, and instead of spending money, I fired up Big D, Little M, Big C by Ninja Theory. Devil May Cry, the reboot, whenever that came out, a couple years ago now. And wow, I am really, really enjoying that game. Backstory, I have no real history with the Devil May Cry franchise at all. I mean, it's not like a cherished or beloved franchise for me. I played probably half of the very first Devil May Cry back in the day and just like, this is neat and whatever. Just kind of didn't finish it for whatever reason. And, you know, I tweeted out that I was having a lot of fun with it and people said, oh, well, your opinion might change when you get to the last couple levels. And you know what? It might, but I doubt it, because I think PS Plus is a great value. And if I get to the last couple of levels and I quit having fun, I just stop playing it and move on. But so far I'm having a blast with it. It, you know, it's an action, third person action, fast paced, jump around, shoot slash combo type game, with some cool, it's not tight platforming, but some fun traversal elements thrown throughout the game where you get to link how you move across the world and the basic premise of the game. And people know this probably because it's an old game, but if you've forgotten, you know, you're in the real world, but then they pull you into limbo for where you're fighting the demons. And I think it's an interesting storytelling mechanic to justify what, you know, God of War and Devil May Cry and a lot of these action games have, which is artificial walls for why you can't clear an arena or a kill box. And in this game it works. It's because, you know, the demons are controlling limbo. And it has some, you know, a little bit of the Ubisoft writing on the wall where it's like, kill Dante, like shows up on text on the walls. And then the wall comes up and you're blocked and you're stuck in this room. And it's because they're manipulating the world. And that exists in so many games where it blocks your progression. But here they give it, you know, somewhat of a justification. I think the voice acting is done well. The character is, you know, it's cheeky, it's smart, it's Ninja Theory putting their own spin on the franchise. And I think if you are willing to give it a fresh look, or you're not a huge fan of what the established franchise, I think you can have a lot of fun with it. And these games are weird for me too, the style of game, where I don't consider myself the best gamer around. Like, I will never win a Call of Duty multiplayer. I imagine Dark Souls is frustrating. But for whatever reason, this type of quote-unquote hard game have never seemed hard to me. And I guess it's this action Bayonetta, Ninja Gaiden, I think it was Black and Two. Like, I'd never really had problems with these combo. I really enjoy
humble
them.
Brag,
I think
bro.
People. Well, it is and it isn't. I'm bragging that I'm good at that and I'm awful at other things. So I think, you know, if someone says it's a challenging game, it might not be challenging for you. So for this game, especially if you already own it in your PS Plus collection, it's no longer offered. But if you downloaded it when it came out, you know, you have access to it still if you're still a member. Don't not try it because people described it as hard. for me, these games come naturally, the combo linking and the moving and the chaining, whereas getting a headshot from across a map does not. But it's cool. It definitely, PS3 is probably not the preferred platform to play it on. It's an Unreal Engine game, and it suffers some of those Unreal PS3 stutters, which can be frustrating. But for a game I essentially got, you know, quote unquote, for free with the addition of this PS Plus service, I'm really enjoying it. And don't overlook those games. There's so many. I get reminded of it because I see the Steam sale. And I'm like, I'm going to buy that. And it's like, oh, wait, I already own it, quote unquote, on PS3. So I should go play it there. But yeah, I don't. Did you ever check this game out whenever it came out? Oh, 2011 or whenever the heck it was, Jeff?
No, I didn't. I heard a lot of good things about it, but I had played it at trade shows and stuff and was sort of like, I'm not really digging it. So I there's other stuff that happened that week, whatever.
No, I get it. The aesthetic of the game is it's a little, it can be a little much too stomach. You know, they don't shy away from grotesque creatures and like Rob Zombie. This is easily a directed by Rob Zombie style game. You know what I mean? And it's like metal music. And if you're not willing to embrace that, you know, month or 4 years in high school where you were like emo slash metal, it's, you know, it could be a little off-putting. The characters are grotesque and over the top and stuff like that, but if you embrace that world and get into it, it's a lot of fun. So if you have it, Jeff, maybe give it a shot. But I know there's literally a million games to play, but if our listeners are looking for something, go check out your backlog and see if it's there. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Jeff, what's on your playlist this week?
Well, first, I'd like to give a shout out to Steam for reminding me when I already own a game, when I've got stuff in my cart.
Yes. Yeah. It's so sad, but so true.
It's like, oh, yeah, right. I've been playing a fair amount of Hearthstone this week.
Oh, me too. I love that game with my whole heart.
So I've slowly been making progress in that. My son's partially from my son being back home from college, and he's a big fan of that game, so he's always leaning over my shoulder and pointing out why I'm being stupid.
Well, I'd love to talk
about it. But I enjoy it, and it goes down so smooth. You know, it's real, you know, it's such a quick play. It's easy to just pop in at a moment and do it.
Were you a CCG guy before Hearthstone? I mean, did you play Magic and all that?
I had played Magic, but I was never heavily into it like a lot of folks are. So now the whole deck building thing is a little bit of a mystery to me. So I'm kind of learning as I go, but enjoying it. So
have you dropped dollar bills on it yet?
I have not dropped any real money. I am I'm trying to do it on the cheap and do it.
It's certainly possible
with all the in-game gold. So
yeah,
no, it's been fine. And it depends on, you know, again, it's your goals. I'm not looking to, you know, be way up in the league and stuff like that. So I'm just enjoying it for now.
We try to do stories of glories and tales of fails on the show. We try to talk about specific moments. Do you have any moments from Hearthstone that stand out in your mind of something that was really fun or really heartbreaking?
I actually had a game a couple of nights ago where I was down to like 3 health or something, and my opponent had like 22 or something. It was something ridiculous like that, and I actually managed to pull it out. I was playing a mage. I usually play mage, and I kept him frozen, and I was able to drop two of those molten giant guys or something.
Ooh.
For like 0 mana. They're like 8/8s, and I just... And then I buffed them all and just pounded them down in one turn. So I was very happy about that.
That's the best. I just had a match the other night where I was playing Priest, and the other guy happened to be a Priest as well. And Priest has a card called Thought Steal where you get to pull 3 cards from the other guy's hand and put them in your hand, or deck, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I dropped a major guy on the board. He Thought Stealed, dropped the same guy, and... killed my guy. Then I pulled, I had a faceless manipulator, and I pulled his guy from his side to my side. And then he pulled the guy right back, because we had the exact same cards. We just kept stealing the same cards from each other and using the same cards back and forth. So it was like this one guy just kept going from side to side. And as much as I love the fact that game doesn't have better communication, I just wish I could have said, "This is hilarious. High five to you, dude." But all I could say was, "Well played."
Just leave it at that. Unspoken. Yeah, so I've been enjoying that. My son is recently back from college, and so we have a few games that we kind of just do all together as a family. And one of them is we do the Telltale stuff. So we're working our way through Wolf Among Us, And we just finished the third chapter because the third and the fourth both came out while he was away. So we did the third, and we're going to be doing the fourth probably next week. So I've been enjoying their stuff a lot. I liked Walking Dead and Wolf Among Us, I think, is a nice step up from that. Although it's interesting, I mean, just philosophically about how much are these games versus movies. You know, I feel like there's choices, but the choices sort of, you know, they help you build the imaginary world inside your head mm-hmm. about what's going on. But I wonder how much, you know, game wise is really affected one way or the other. I mean, I feel like Walking Dead, you know, kind of always ended up with the same basic story in spite of the choices that it, you know, kind of gave you. They were kind of false choices in a way. And, you know, same thing with Wolf Among Us, even though we're really enjoying it and enjoying the story and the presentation and the creativity, I wonder how much it's really a game versus a movie and where that line really is on some of these types of products.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think you have to decide that the choices are all about the little details of the story along the way, you know, the minor diversions and the way things are conveyed rather than the destination, you know, because the destinations don't actually end up much different. But I found, at least with Walking Dead, I haven't played Wolf Among Us, but much to my shame, but I found that I was invested enough in the actual moment-to-moment discussions and how those played out that I felt like my choices were impactful enough to make me feel satisfied. But.
Yeah, and it's fun playing it as a group, too, because, you know, we're all screaming at each other about what we should do and, you know, and the timer's ticking down and,
it's awesome.
You know, and you're really – you know, so it's a fun part of it. I mean, there's one scene where characters, they're in a fight and, you know, my son just kept clicking the fight button, even though you could have walked away, and he starts gouging the guy's eyes out. And we're like, what are you doing? Stop. But it was,
I want to be,
it's interesting. And I'm a big fan also of like, Kentucky Route Zero. I recently played through the third chapter in that, and that's act three. And that's a very similar kind of thing, right? It basically follows the same course, but you basically get struck the dialogue as you go. You're not changing what happens in the game, but you're changing who that you're creating the characters in a way. Not that it impacts the game, but you're creating them in the way they live in your mind and what their backstories are and things like that. And it's an interesting concept, and I'm curious to see where that goes in the future.
I want to be the kind of dad you are. It just sounds awesome. Designing games with your kids, playing games as a group, that just sounds awesome. And kudos to that. All right. I'm going to talk about what's on my playlist, but first we got to get to our third sponsor, Shopify. Shopify is a hosted e-commerce solution that allows you to set up and run your own online store in minutes. You pick a template, add your products, pick your payment processor, say that three times fast, from PayPal to Stripe to Authorize.net, and then ship your stuff with just a few clicks. It makes it so easy to sell online. And there's no software to download. You don't have to host, upgrade, or maintain anything. You pick from over 100 professionally designed e-commerce templates or create your own with full control over HTML and CSS. And there are no bandwidth limits and no need to worry about scaling when your store becomes popular. And every Shopify store is level 1 PCI DSS compliant and totally secure. Shopify has just announced their Shopify POS. It's an iPad application that lets you sell your Shopify store's product in a physical retail setting, which is quick and easy. Just browse your store's catalog, pick a customer's products, swipe their credit card, print the receipt, or send it through email. You can automatically sync products and orders, and there's only one dashboard to manage all your retail and online stores. So get the Shopify POS hardware's point-of-sale hardware, which includes a credit card reader, cash drawer, iPad stand, and receipt printer. Order online and shipping is free. Just visit shopify.com/5x5 and you'll get 3 months free. That's shopify.com/5x5 for 3 free months of Shopify. Check them out today. All you need is something to sell. We thank Shopify for sponsoring the show and hope you support them in return. Okay, so last week I talked a little bit about WildStar, and Garnett was kind of quizzing me on it and saying, you know, it doesn't sound like you're in love with it. Well, this week I found the love. WildStar is the MMO from Carbine, set in space. I kind of described it as space WoW. It is space WoW, but I finally found the love. I hit level 20 this week and got into my first dungeon, and that is really where this game shines. It is so well designed. The dungeons are hard, challenging, interesting, and it really makes you realize what they're doing that's so special with the combat system. The combat system in this game is all based around what they call telegraphs, which are these patterns that show up on the ground beneath you or beneath your enemy. If it's beneath you, it shows you the cone of effect of your attacks. If it's beneath your enemy, it shows where they're going to be shooting you. And you have to sort of dance and dodge your way into areas that aren't red on the ground before their attack goes off so you don't get hit. Which is all well and good when you're leveling your guy and you're kind of I was kind of unimpressed with the leveling, just kind of trudging through quests and clicking stuff, and I wasn't really drawn into the fiction of the game. But when you get into the dungeon and they ramp up the complexity of these telegraph systems and they start requiring you to do all kinds of crazy things to get in and out of those red areas of effect on the ground, it becomes such an exciting challenge. Now, I know there's lots of these kinds of things in WoW, as the game progressed over years and years, they added more kind of weird, safety dance, and you got to run over here, and the off tank has to swap with the tank, and some guy's going to get flung to this side of that thing. Yes, there's complexity in these other games, but this is literally the first dungeon that I could go into at level 20, and it was wild and over the top. There was no ramping up of difficulty. We had to do the first boss like a dozen times before we beat him because it required such teamwork. It required really being aware of your surroundings and physically dodging out of the way of stuff that was coming up from the ground. I'll give you an example. So this first boss, you go into this dungeon and he is this giant dude who's surrounded by four shaman. You start attacking him and then he does this attack where it's a giant sort of cross plus symbol on the ground that's huge. So you have to dodge out of the way of that every time he does it. You work him down enough that he activates his four shaman and they start attacking. You have to kill each of those four guys before you can attack the main boss again. Well, he is throwing these big kind of meteors at you, and so it's the sphere that gets locked on you, and you can run around and the red telegraph sphere is going to follow you wherever you run, and it's going to expand until it gets to the point where it locks on you. So your job is to run with that sphere and get close to those shamans so that the meteor hits them instead of you, and then dodge out of the way at the last second so that it hits them and you're out of the area effect. So then you knock all those guys down, and then you have to go back and fight the boss again, and he starts doing crazy stuff on the ground where there's only a tiny sliver of the floor that isn't covered in red, and you have to jump into that when it comes up. I could go on and on. This is just the first boss of a multi-boss dungeon, and it made the entire game, I kind of got it. I understood what was so special about it, and I am so into this game. I've been playing it. I'll play it as soon as we finish recording here today. I am loving WildStar, not to mention the fact that I sort of got hooked on making my house, which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It has player housing. It's sort of like a mini version of The Sims, but inside an MMO. So you're literally looting items in the world, these rare items that are just decor items for your house, like a couch or a shelf or a little plushie thing. But then you can take them into your house and futz with them. You can make them small or large. You can rotate them around, place them anywhere, link them to other items so that you create weird monstrosities that you can then place in certain ways. Dan Trachtenberg, who I'm playing with, is making a skate park at his house because you can, form stuff in certain things, and people are making skate parks, and he's got a hoverboard for his character. So yes, I acknowledge that that's ridiculous, but it's kind of fun also. And you can visit other people's houses and go on their skate parks like I did, because I'm that guy who did that.
You're a good friend.
I'm a good friend. Yeah, well, it's kind of weird.
Did you bring a snack or something? You brought a little gift?
Oh, yeah, you have to. It's only polite. But it's really awkward, actually, when you go visit someone's house and they're not online. So you can, wander around their house when they're not home. It's very strange. But I'm digging the game, man. I am into WildStar.
So has, come on, don't blank brain, Morrowind. What is it?
Elder Scrolls Online.
Thank you. Is that backburnered?
Yeah, it's backburnered.
Have you gone back to it since?
But that's no fault of that game. I really do love that game. It's just, you know, me and shiny objects, you know?
No, but I think that even shows that you more of the, I think it's easy to love something, but it's like, yeah, this is great and exciting, but like you're cheating on it with Elder Scrolls.
Right.
You know, it's like, you're great, Wildstar. And now I go to the bathroom and, oh no, I logged out. Uh-oh. No one look.
The honest truth is that my subscription ran out for Elder Scrolls right about the time that Wildstar launched. So I don't have an active subscription anymore, and it'll take a lot for me to get back over there. And really what will happen is that game will go free to play, and then I'll be able to play it again. So, I mean, it's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was really lukewarm on Wildstar, and I have totally found the love. As I said last week, the design and look of that world is so striking and so interesting and so fun and whimsical. I'm digging that. I was not digging the questing system, and I still have some major gripes. The game has some bizarre design choices that it's like, how did it get this far along with them not catching that? Like a really, really confusing and unclear map system and a bunch of stuff. But there's a lot of user-made add-ons, UI add-ons, that kind of fix all those problems that really shouldn't still be in the game. So a lot of those problems are marginalized, and the fun has come front and center, and I'm digging it. I'm in, as I tend to be with MMOs. I'm in. So that is what's taking up my entire playlist, and I, like I said, I can't wait to get back to it. I'm trying to level up. Oh, the other smart thing they do in that game is allow you to play with your friends. Dan was 12 levels higher than we were, and we all got to go into the same dungeon because it auto scales your level. I know Guild Wars does that as well and some other games, but it's nice. It's really nice when games do that, so you don't be like, well, I guess I can't play with you even though you're my buddy because you out-leveled me and I was gone for a week or whatever.
What do you think of if, you know, like what they pitched at Far Cry 4 at E3, where like you can call in your friend for free? Has an MMO ever, I think that'd be such an interesting.
Well, they've done a lot of those pitch. Play
like free weekends.
Play for your friend for free. God, I can't speak today. Play with your friend for free. And then also, if you mentor your friend, they have like this scroll that turns them into a level 60 immediately or whatever. You know, they have a lot of that stuff. And this game has a mentoring system as well, where you can play, if you're a higher level, you can play down to a friend's level. It'll auto scale you down and you get renown, which is a really powerful currency that the game has to let you buy all the coolest stuff, requires renown. So you get rewarded for, you know, going down to somebody else's level and mentoring them, which is a great thing as well. Jeff, are you ever an MMO guy?
I played a little bit of, well, I guess more than a little bit of World of Warcraft back in the day. Mm-hmm. I got my Tauren Hunter up to level 40, but I never did any of the expansions or anything that were added after that. I kind of bailed on it. And I did EVE Online for a little bit, but never really got hooked into it in the way that you need to. So yeah. Unfortunately, my gaming tends to be in kind of short little bursts, and it's tough for me to get organized for, you know, for the social aspects, to be online at the same time with my friends and do raids or whatever.
Well, so, you could, I mean, it would be so long before you got to play Wildstar because it starts with a W. So
that's a good point. Yeah. Maybe I'll switch to reverse alphabetical order.
There you go. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. I'm anxious to go play one more Wildstar right now. So we're going to wrap things up. But I really appreciate you hanging out with us, Jeff. I have to apologize to everybody. This we were encountering some technical difficulties with the call-in system, so no phone calls today, unfortunately, but they should be back next week. And if you want to write down that number, it's 512-518-5714. We'll be back with those calls next week. But Jeff Engelstein, thank you so much for joining us. Tell people where they can find your stuff.
You can see the website for Ludology at ludology.net. And I am on Twitter as at G Engelstein, which is GENGELSTEIN. So,
and
I look forward to chatting with you guys.
And
there.
Buy Space Cadets and Space Cadets Dice Duel. They're both excellent games.
Kids are in college. Doesn't pay for itself. Buy the games.
Awesome. Christian, what about you? What's going on this week?
Today, at Monday, if you're listening to this live, or today when it comes up, the newest episode of my stand-up comedy podcast on Nerdist, What's New, went live, which is with Carl Hess, Andy Peters, and Mark Ellis. We do new material and then talk about, you know, writing and how you come up with jokes and stuff like that. If you're into stand-up, it's cool. It was a really fun show, so people can check that out. Tuesday, I'm in San Diego at Lestat's Comedy Night. Then I red-eye out to New York City, and I am at UCB East doing improv versus stand-up there Wednesday. Then I have two shows Thursday, one in Brooklyn called Thursday Night Massacre, and then one in Manhattan, Cabin, on Thursdays. Friday, I have a show, but I don't know the details. Saturday, I'll be in my hotel room watching Netflix, being sad. Sunday, doing improv versus stand-up as part of the Del Close Marathon in New York City. And then I'll be red-eyeing back Sunday night, where I will be doing material to the 130 people on the plane with me, because that's an audience, you know what I mean? Like, they can't, as soon as that fastened seatbelt light comes off, I'm standing up and I'm doing jokes. So you can get with it, or you can, and I'll be in New York this week. So if you're there and you want to come to a show, come say hi. Otherwise, don't come. If you don't want to come, I'm not going to make you. Don't do it. That'd be dumb.
Fair enough. It's nice of you to be so easy about that. Anyway.
I'm not negative, Jeff. I'm not like you.
Right. Keep trying to tell the people that. They know the truth. This week, what am I? I'm on /Filmcast. You can check out. Also, follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata with two N's and one T. This has been a fun one. I really appreciate you being on, Jeff. I hope people check out your stuff, because I'm a huge fan. And we'll be next week on with Ryan O'Donnell from Area 5 is going to join us. So that'll be a great episode. I hope you guys can tune in then, 11 a.m. Pacific time every Monday. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.